Okay, this is a review for the final. This is where I go over the questions and you write the numbers down and only study those. Okay. People ask me, why do you bother doing that, you know? I don't want you to, I'm not trying to trick you into failing the exam or something. I'm trying to make sure you know the most important stuff. So I don't mind if you know in advance what's the most important stuff, okay? This will be a normal, just found out, a normal class, like halfway through we'll take a break, and then there'll be groups to go over some of the final exam questions with your group leaders, okay? And the group leaders are going to get it just before everyone else does, okay? And then at the end, we have some planning to do, okay? All right. No, it looks like Lama Sopa has agreed to teach here tomorrow, which would be really fantastic, but I don't want to give him a bad impression of our ability to serve a Lama properly, so you know, I want to talk about it at the end of the class and make sure everyone has their assignments to make sure we treat him right, okay? All right, here we go. First and most important question in my mind is explain the three meanings of the word diamond in the title. Of course, you know the title of the Diamond Cutter Sutra. And the point, as you know, is when you see emptiness directly, you see a higher reality, okay, which you have never seen before. And our reality pales in comparison to that reality. And then as you come down out of that experience, which takes maybe 20 minutes, you search in your mind for something in this reality to remind you of what you saw. And diamond is the closest thing. All people who see emptiness directly, when they come out of it, find the diamond as the closest thing. Why? For three reasons. One, that it is the closest to an ultimate. See, you have perceived ultimate reality. And a diamond is the closest thing to something which is the most of anything. Like, there's no such thing as the longest thing in the world because you can always add another inch. There's no such thing as the shortest thing in the world because you can always cut it in half. But there is an ultimate reality, a true ultimate, which is emptiness. Diamond is close to that because diamond is the hardest thing in the natural universe. Okay? And so it, as an idea, close to ultimate, it's close. But the day you see emptiness directly, you will search for an ultimate and diamond will come in your mind. And if for the rest of your life you never did anything else, you'd want to be close to diamonds. Okay? You'd want to be somewhere touching them, looking at them, to remember what happened to you for 20 minutes one day, maybe 15 years ago, 20 years ago. But still you'd want to be near them, touch them, see them. And it'd be worth it to go get a job and work there for 15, 20 years. Just to be close to them. And for no other reason. You know, even if they didn't pay you anything, it would be well worth it in your mind to remember what happened. You see what I mean? And that's the main importance of diamond. First one. Okay. Second one. Diamond is totally clear. There's a wall of diamond between me and you, and if there was nothing reflecting on it, you couldn't see it. You see, nothing is as pure as diamond, like glass. If you hold it up this way, it looks clear, but if you hold it on the edge, you see green. You can't see through it. That's because it has one like atom of iron for every 2,000 atoms of carbon or glass or silica or whatever. And diamond's not like that. Diamond, there could be a wall between me and the exit sign this thick, and I could still see the exit sign perfectly. Okay, what's that got to do with emptiness? Every object around you has its own emptiness. Ultimate truth is not any farther away than your eyebrow or your nose or, you know, your hand, but you can't see it, okay? If you could see it for 20 minutes, what happens? We've talked about it many times, but basically, you see the day of your own enlightenment. You know how many lifetimes it's going to take to get there. You meet the Dharmakaya of the Buddha directly. You have all these amazing experiences. No one ever after that can tell you anything that's interesting. Okay? That's it. You know everything. I mean, you know everything that matters. You know the contents of the entire Buddhist scriptures, 200,000 texts. You know, you can look at them or not look at them, it doesn't matter. You saw them. You saw it in 20 minutes. Okay? And you know what your future is going to be. You know what family you're going to be born into. You know who's going to do what for you. You know everything. Seven lifetimes, finished. See your future lives. Okay? Read other people's minds for a while. Okay? Things like that. But there's no... By the way, that's the whole point of this whole course is building something out in Arizona is to give you all the causes you need to have that happen for 20 minutes. Then it's called Kale Jigme. Nothing to worry about. You're never afraid of anything after that. It doesn't matter. No one can hurt you at all. Impossible. You know what I mean? It's just, you saw it, you know. And you're finished. You know, you're on your way out. And there's nothing that any person alive can contribute to you after that. It doesn't matter. You've seen what you have to see. And that's the goal of all these classes. You know, all these stupid homeworks, quizzes, you know, hours and hours of translating, you know, year after year of classes. Poor Winston going crazy and Andrea not getting any sleep, building the place out in Arizona. It has only one goal, and that's that you can have that 20 minutes happen to you, okay? Probably you need, at some point, to consider being out in a place like Arizona where you can be totally quiet for a month or 2 months or 3 months or whatever it takes to do it. And you have to have it on your agenda, in your mind, that I want to do that, okay? Because you have to. That's the only reason to have these classes. Rinpoche used to say, one real incentive for achieving Buddhahood is that you don't have to recite those dakkes anymore. And it's almost the same for, you see emptiness directly, you don't need, I mean, you'll still love to study these things, but you don't have to anymore, okay? And you can do it, and you have to try. You have to try. You have to do it, okay? All right. Third reason that emptiness is close to diamond, or diamond is close to emptiness, is that when you can't scratch a diamond with anything else in the world, but you can smash them with a hammer. And they split, but they don't scratch, okay? Perfect cleavage, but can't be scratched. And every time you smash it, all the pieces of diamond are pure diamond. So there's no distinction between the diamond, okay? Like one atom of diamond and the biggest diamond in the world, which is the, what was that? The in... No, the hope is a little one. It's a blue one. Some used car dealer in New Jersey called me up and said, I have the 410-carat yellow Zales diamond, flawless. Can you help me sell it? I'm like, who are you? And then he got this. I think he's in a mafia or something. I just didn't get into it. But that is the largest cut stone, okay? Anyway, the chemicals of that stone and the smallest stone in the world are the same, okay? Perfectly the same. What's that got to do with emptiness? Every emptiness of every object in the world is totally equivalent. There's no difference in all the emptinesses in the world, okay? Not the slightest difference between the emptiness of the last hair on your eyebrow and the emptiness of the Dharmakaya. There's not a slightest difference. They're totally equal. And when you see emptiness directly, you see it as well as a Buddha sees it. You can't see it better than that. You either see 100% direct emptiness or you don't see it, okay? And nothing is more or less empty than anything else. All things are 100% empty of being self-existent, okay? So all emptinesses are equally empty of something that was never there, and you have to get used to that, okay? Did this thing come from a factory and from trees getting cut down? Is that where this stuff came from? You can say that's how it got here, but not why. Okay? Why is what? You have the karma in your mind to perceive these white rectangles as paper to be tested on in a week or two. Okay? You have that karma. There is no final examination in my hand. Okay? You have the karma to see it as a final examination. Okay? Just get used to that. A final examination in my hand which was not brought into this room by your karma has the same quality as a two-headed, 40-foot purple elephant raging through this room at this moment. That they have the same, we call ontological status. They have the same percentage of existing, which is zero, okay? You brought this to this room. Nope. And if you ever look for a final exam that you didn't bring into this room, you'll never find one. You see what I mean? There is no such thing. Okay? All the objects around you have been created by you. And you are forced to see them by your past karma. Oh, well, great. I'd rather have chocolate chip ice cream than final exam. Okay? About the same color. Okay? And got that little black spot on it. There you go. Okay? Not by willpower, okay? The trick is you cannot do it by willpower. It's being forced on you by your past karma. You want to have ice cream next year this time? Stop being bad, okay? Keep your vows. And then next year this will be something more pleasant, okay? All right, that's all. That's all there is to it. His Holiness said it today. He said in Tibetan, look, you can't just be happy because you want to be happy. You can't just sit there and say, I feel like being happy now. Oh, hey, what happened? I'm not happy. You know, and he said, you got to set the seeds up. You got to set the causes up. And then 6 months, a year, okay, because your mind forces you to see what you see. Imputed means your mind is forcing you to organize this information in a certain way. And that's coming only from your past behavior. And what you see is what you get. You know what I mean? What you get is what you see. Anyway. You've created it, okay? Everything. So if you don't like it, change it. I used to come home and complain about work. Rinpoche would say, if you don't like it, then change it. He would never listen to me. Okay. Why is it important to include the word cutter in Diamond Cutter? I hate it when people call it the Diamond Sutra, okay? Cutter means diamond is close, diamond is important, diamond has meaning. But it's nothing like ultimate reality. Okay, what's the closest thing in the normal world to emptiness? Diamond. How close is it? Nothing. Not at all. Okay? Nothing. Totally different reality. Totally higher level of being and of existence. And if you see it, the quality of that level of existence, if you see it directly for 20 minutes, you see all those other things. You see your future life. The day of your enlightenment is decided at that moment. And you can see it. And you know what they'll call you and everything. It's finished, you know. Like, the rest of your life is just, like, waiting, okay? All right. So you have to say cutter, meaning diamond is close, but not very close. Closest thing, but not close at all. How's that? All right. I think the next question concerns gacha. You remember what gacha is. Buddhism says that for you to see emptiness, you must understand what a self-existent thing would look like. What's an intrinsically existing thing look like? Okay, it just looks like a piece of paper that was made of a factory, from trees, etc. And that this paper has come from that. Okay, that's not true. Okay, why? You can cut down trees and build a factory, and you might not get paper. That proves that's not the cause. Get it? Okay, but if you supply paper to someone who needs paper, you must get paper. And that's the real cause for paper. You got to get used to it. I had this very sarcastic, famous journalist in Ireland was in my class, and in Ireland, and he says, what the hell, you know, you're implying that you could run a car without petrol, you could fill it up halfway and get to Dublin on that, you know. And I said, yeah. And I said, how do you get the first half there? He says, the petrol. And I said, why? See, and he got it. He was like silent. He was totally cool. He was a very interesting guy. He got it. Why does petrol work now and not 100 years ago? You see what I mean? What is it about petrol that makes it run your car halfway to Dublin? You see what I mean? What is it? What's in the petrol that makes it run? And why didn't it work 100 years ago? Oh, they couldn't figure it out. Okay. I don't know. How come penicillin doesn't work anymore? You got to think like that. Okay. Where is the power of things really coming from? The difference between the Svatantrika that His Holiness was describing today and Madhyamika is that they accept that something like paper may not have its own natural existence, okay? But they don't get it with cause and effect. To exist by definition, to exist by nature, to them means that self-existent things must have self-existent results. Meaning, I understand that the paper maybe isn't self-existent, that it's come here through certain causes, but I don't get it why the sun, the rising of the sun, doesn't exist from its own side. Come on, 5 billion people see it every day. It can't be like this collective perception. It is. Okay? You got to get used to that. Okay? They have trouble with cause and effect. That's where they decide that, no, this is not my projection. This is not my perception. Okay? They have trouble when they get to that far. All right? So different schools have different gakchas. But of course, you're going to explain the Prasangika one, the highest one. Okay. When you get out of the direct perception of emptiness, you have about, I don't know, 15 to 20 major realizations, okay? For example, you see the day of your own enlightenment. You see what they will call you and what they won't call you. You see exactly how many lifetimes it will take. You know, in a general way, what kind of families you'll be born into, what your circumstances will be financially, what kind of lamas you will have early in your lifetime take care of you. You see those things directly. You see the Dharmakaya of the Buddha directly. Very often you have a direct experience of bodhicitta. Okay? And all of these, one of the first direct experiences, all of these things can be grouped into four families of amazing things that have happened to you on that day, called the four Arya truths, mistranslated in the old days as noble. Nothing to do with noble. It is noble, but that's not the point. Arya means a person who has seen emptiness directly. That's all. You could call them the four truths for people who have seen emptiness directly. How's that? Forget the word noble. Just junk it, okay? So the question will be asking you to put in a few of the realizations. You know, some schools say 15, some schools say 16, but you got them all anyway, okay? All right. To me, that's probably the most important part of the final exam, is seeing emptiness directly. And if one person in this class in the next 10 years, or the last 10 years, saw emptiness directly, it would be worth all the effort put into the classes, okay? And that would be more of a result than, you know, that would be well worth 100 or 1,000 times that effort, okay? And it's that rare. So you got to work really hard. Okay. There's this question about this guy. Do you remember the guy, Tonson Supamala? He got he was sitting out under a tree innocently. The king's wife showed up, asked him a few questions. The king showed up with his hunters and assumed the worst and staked him down on the ground and started cutting off his limbs, starting with his finger joints. And he used wisdom. He used a perception of emptiness at that point. And I like that example because it addresses a misconception about perception of emptiness. There's this thing like, and I used to try it. When you go to the dentist and they're drilling the hell out of your teeth, you know, just think about emptiness. You know, and I'd go there and they go, and you're like, emptiness, emptiness, you know, and then it hits a nerve and you're like, you know. And I was with Ken Rinpoche, you know. And I remember when they hit his nerve, and he goes, and he was like, I'm afraid he's going to hit the guy, you know. He got this fist, he was like, this, you know. And I'm like, okay, it's okay, Rinpoche, you know. And it's good. You're supposed to put your mind in some kind of emptiness, forget it, okay? There's nothing to do with emptiness, okay? You know, the perception of pain at that moment is caused by your past karma. It's being forced on you by your past karma. You can't deny your past karma. You can't say, oh, I'll think about emptiness and it won't hurt, you know. By the way, is it possible that someone might have thought about emptiness and it didn't hurt? Yes. Why? The karma wore out for it to hurt, and now the karma is forcing them to see emptiness or think about emptiness. That's okay. That's possible. But the thinking about emptiness doesn't stop the pain. Impossible. So we had a guy, this guy's getting his fingers cut off. He's thinking about emptiness to help out with the situation. Why? He's just dealing with the future, okay? The present is already painful. It's too late to deal with the present, okay? Karma has ripened. His fingers are getting cut off. It hurts like hell. But he refuses to perpetuate the violence. He says, you know, keep cutting, it's okay, you know. It's like, he knows where it's coming from. He hurt someone in the past. But he's just decided he's not going to perpetuate. And he says in the Diamond Cutter Sutra, this is Lord Buddha in his past life or something, he says, if I had gotten angry, if I had perceived the king as self-existent, I could have gotten angry, but I didn't. You know, so I didn't get angry, and that's why I'm a Buddha now, instead of another schmuck getting his fingers cut off. Okay? And he said that. Okay? All you can deal with is the future. Future is, this event is empty. Why? I brought my fingers here, he brought his knife here. Okay? By my karma. And I brought him here with his knife, by my karma. And the event is happening by my karma. The three spheres, the three korsum, are here because of my actions. And I'm being forced to see that. And okay, it hurts really bad. And it did hurt. But I refuse to get angry. And I refuse to see him as self-existent. You can't get angry unless you see him as self-existent. It's impossible. Anger and an understanding, an active understanding, okay? It only lasts for a few seconds. Then you get angry again. An active understanding of that this guy is empty, and I could have seen him as massaging my fingers, but now I see him as cutting my fingers because of my karma. Okay? So he's empty. What I see is my karma. And I'm sorry for that, but at least I refuse to react again the old way. Break the circle of violence. Is it natural? No. Is it hard to do? Completely. Does it stop samsara? That's the whole point. Yeah. So then he was able to do the true perfection of patience, as opposed to plain old patience. Patience is sitting there and saying, Mom told me in Plaza in first grade that I shouldn't hurt people. You know, okay. You know, and then perfection of patience is, you're empty, I have to see you schmuck because of my bad deeds in the past, and I refuse to get angry at you. You know, you're such a schmuck, I refuse to get angry at you. You know, because I don't want to meet you again. And that's all. And that goes moment to moment at work and with your family, okay? People like that. Yeah. Sorry? It doesn't work. That's a wrong explanation. Okay? It's possible to think, like Mahamudra says, watch the emptiness of your mind. So I guess if you got angry, you could watch the emptiness of that. Watching the emptiness of your anger would be the exercise of looking at your anger, understanding that every single second of its existence is destroying thousands of good karmas you did in the past for years. You see? And then you blink out of it. You see what I mean? You'd say, oh my God, too burning up too much good karma, too fat. You know what I mean? To see the emptiness of it would be to perceive its function in destroying thousands of karmas every minute. And you just, the minute you thought of that, you'd just pop out of the anger. It wouldn't be worth it to be angry. Okay? Yeah? Why punish people who do bad things, okay? I mean, I don't want you to lose final exam questions, but it's a good question, okay? You see, somebody comes and looks like they're going to shoot a gun at you. Or somebody has killed somebody else somebody has threatened somebody else, and you have a choice of putting them in prison or leaving them on the streets to hurt people. So what do? If you put them in prison, do you protect the people they would have hurt? Not necessarily, okay? If they have the karma to be hurt, they'll be hurt by a truck instead of this mugger that you put in jail, okay? So does that mean we shouldn't put muggers in jail? No. Okay, why? Because it's the right thing to put someone in jail who might hurt somebody. It's the right thing for whom? For you. Okay? It'll make you a Buddha. Okay? Will it stop the people from getting hurt? No. Get used to it. Get used to that. That's how things work. Okay? Get used to that. You have to do the right thing. You have to protect people's lives and property with all you can. But the result of your actions are basically going to protect your life and your property. It may or may not help those other people. Okay? But you must do it. You got to get used to that. A lot of people get halfway and then they make the grand mistake. Jensen Kaufman calls it the grand mistake, you know? Oh, you mean if someone's getting mugged and I try to help them, whether I can help them or not only depends on their karma? Right. Well, then why the hell should I help them? That's called the great mistake. You see what I mean? You must help them. Oh, so the guy will start mugging them. No. Okay. So you can achieve Buddhahood and then really help him. Okay, get used to that. What's the proof that going to their aid doesn't help them? It doesn't always work. You got to get used to that. Karma always works. Good karma always works. The karma of helping them always works. Meaning, you protect your own life and your own, you know what I mean? And then you teach other people how to do it and no one gets mugged anymore. Okay? That's how the world changes into a paradise. Get used to it, it's hard. But never make the great mistake of thinking, oh, it's their karma so I don't have to do anything. Okay? It's their karma so you do have to do something. How's that? Nagarjuna would have said that. Arya Nagarjuna said, yeah, it's their karma, that's why you have to do something. Get it? Alright? Okay, yeah. That's true too. Okay. Yeah. It is your karma. What you see is your karma. I mean, if you have the pleasure of watching yourself protect someone, that's your karma. To be successful, that's your karma. Yeah. But it's their karma to see themselves being protected. How's that? I had this very, very, very skeptical lady in Ireland. And she asked this question. This is the first day. This is one of her first questions. Strong, devout Catholic, you know. And at the end of the, and she asked all this line of questioning about karma, exactly this same line of questioning. At the end, she asked the organizer if she could make a testament. 3 days later, you know, she gets up and she says, in 18 years, I know why I moved to this city. It was to meet you and hear this, you know. And next to my son, this is the most important thing that ever happened to me. It's really weird. It was really cool because she got it about the karma. She got that part perfect, and she was like, wow, you know, she, about the mugger. We're talking about the mugger, okay? Why do things change, and why do some things in our world cause other things? For example, why does medicine always work? Or why are some investment strategies always successful? That's a trick question, right? If you've ever invested. Right, John? Okay. meaning, okay, should you take risks or should you be conservative? Doesn't matter, okay? That's why there's this Wall Street Journal joke. On the front page is a guy who took a risk and lost all his money and he's a fool. A year later, he's on the front page for being risky and he's a genius. On the third page, there's a story about a guy who's conservative who's a fool. And there's on the fifth page is a guy who is a conservative and he's a genius. You see, I mean, whatever they do, if they fail, they're stupid. If they get money, they're a genius. But they did the same thing. You know what I mean? And it doesn't matter whether you take risks or you're conservative. There's just people, it's confirmed, you know? Throw a dart at a dartboard, go to an investment advisor, and it's exactly the same rate of return. You know, they had kids, 3-year-olds, throwing darts at a dartboard, and then they went to Goldman Sachs and hired 3 guys, and they got the same return, you know? Okay. No, that's the... It only depends on whether you've been generous or not. Totally. Okay? Nothing else matters. Nothing else matters. Okay? People tell me, are you telling me that if I had the karma, like, I wouldn't even have to go to work? Like, people just deliver checks to my door? And say, yeah, that's the whole idea. Okay? That's the whole idea. Okay? You might want to collect the karma before you try it. Okay. All right. Let's see here. I like this one. What is Jetsu Kapa's... We're on to Vinaya, I think, okay? We just finished Diamond Cutter Sutra. What's Jetsu Kapa's reaction to the idea that people who practice Tantra don't have to respect their other vows? He's thinking of the Hasa Valley, where it's very hard to grow anything. People ask me, why are the Tibetans meat eaters? Hey, you couldn't grow anything else in Tibet, okay? I mean, barley for a few weeks, you know, or something. But suppose you just planted your only barley field for the year, and it grew like 2 feet high, and then this hailstorm, like a Tibetan hailstorm, like golf balls, thousands of golf balls falling on the field, and it just wipes it out in 10 minutes. Your whole work for the year is just wiped out, you know? And this used to happen in Tibet regularly. The name for hail is Sera. And it was so frequent that on this one mountain that they called the monastery Sera. Okay. And we go to the Debum guys, which means rice pile, and say, do you want us to do our Sera thing on you in the debates tonight? You know, like wipe out the rice? And they say, yeah, but you know the hail always melts after it sits in the field for a while. You know? Anyway, he says that idea that tantric followers don't have to honor their other vows is as ridiculous and as crazy and as destructive as that hailstorm. Okay? Your tantric vows are built. It's like the third story of a building. Your pratimoksha vows are the first story. Your bodhisattva vows are the second story. And your tantric vows are the third story. Period. Okay? You cannot... And frankly, to tell you, you know, a secret, half the tantric vows are pratimoksha vows. Okay? No, I mean, they're the same vows. Just take it with a different angle. Okay? So it's just a stupid thing to say. It's a crazy thing to say. Okay? There's a very beautiful... I put in this question about, you know, there's a bodhisattva vow that you have to break your one of your seven pratimoksha vows, body or speech, right, not mind, in extraordinary circumstances. Meaning, some guy's running away from a mugger, he comes into your house, he says, hide me in the closet, you put him in the closet, somebody bangs on the door, and they got this hand behind them, and they're like, did you see a little guy running around? And you say, no. You have to say no. Your bodhisattva vows say no. Okay? Then Jetsun Kapa's commentary says, if you have been a bodhisattva on the bodhisattva path for millions of years and reached a high level of realization, you have to keep this vow. Then you have to keep this vow to the letter. If you're not up to that level, take it easy on this vow. Okay? Alright? And he also said ordained people can never break vow number three for one of these purposes and still be ordained. They have to, in an extraordinary circumstance where you have to make sex with this lady or she'll kill 50,000 people, she has her finger on the atomic bomb button or something, then you have to properly disrobe, okay, first. Okay, that's a rule, in case it happens to you. But otherwise, I mean, I think that vow is very dangerous, and you have to be aware of the limitations on that vow, okay? I just don't want you running around and using that vow whenever you feel like it, okay? That's one of the vows that people would use when they weren't supposed to, right? Okay. Next question is, Maitreya actually made a comment at one point on what you should do if you hear a Buddhist teaching that you cannot accept at this moment, okay? So you hear some Buddhist teaching, and you say, look, I can't accept that right now. Then Maitreya said, look, I respect that. And, you know, that other guy, what's his name, Shakyamuni, he also said, you know, question me and fight with me and debate me, but don't believe everything I say until you've figured it out yourself, okay? But Maitreya warns us, he says, learn how to shelve it for the time being. Don't reject it. Okay. The point is, when you reach a Buddhist teaching that you can't handle right now, okay, then don't reject it. Don't say, this is crap. I had a student come up to me about some very high teaching. He said, oh, that's all crap, you know. Don't say crap, okay? Say, I don't get it right now. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe you're crazy. I'll leave it for now. And Maitreya says, put it in a box with your... I have a student in North Carolina, great student, who keeps a list of questions they're not sure about yet. And then they cross them out, you know, when they get, 2 years later, they hear a good explanation from Geshe so-and-so and they cross it out. That's what you're supposed to do, okay? Don't go to one extreme and accept everything that a Buddhist teacher says. Nobody wanted that to happen. It would make a bunch of crazy people. That's how Nazi Germany happened, okay? On the other hand, don't say it's crap, you know? Don't decide. Just leave it. Suspend judgment for now. And put it in a box called to be answered later. Okay, that's what Maitreya says in the Uttara Tantra. Okay. There's a question about the four white deeds and the four black deeds, which are extra commitments to your bodhisattva vows. Now, why did I pile them on you when you got 64 vows to worry about already? I like number three. To me, it's like really incredible. Okay? And you have to figure out what it is. It's basically Dakpen Nawa, which means to go around believing that, what is it, Truman's World, or What's that other guy? Matrix. It's amazing that two of them came out in a year or two, you know. They're not supposed to tell you that much. They're supposed to keep it secret, you know. I don't know who approved two of those movies in 1 year, okay. I mean, they told me that we weren't allowed to talk about it more than once a year. But anyway, the fact that everybody in this audience is already enlightened, and I'm the only one who's not, and you're humoring me so I can become this big teacher, and I'm forced to study this stuff again, okay? And, okay. I know you wouldn't do that. Next. You gotta list four typical ways, causes that might make a person break their bodhisattva vows. But I'm most interested in number one, which was, you never learned them. Which is the case with most Westerners that I've met. It's not that they're not nice people, and it's not that they don't care about their vows. Nobody ever taught them their vows. Okay? That's the easiest way to break your vows. Do you get... Does the law of karma cut slack on you if you didn't know? No. Okay. Sorry. It's like gravity, you know? Oh, I didn't know a pen would fall down if I let it go. Could you just like... No, it doesn't work that way. Okay? It's a law like gravity. Okay. It does have to do it. Now, he caught me. I was waiting for somebody. But then there's this story that Ken Rinpoche wouldn't teach us the tantric vows relating to the 50 verses because he thought that once we knew them and broke them, it'd be worse than if we didn't know them and broke them. I think you're right. Okay. I like the six kinds of suffering according to the first Panchen Lama. You know, there are presentations that go through the hell realms, and there are presentations that go through, you know, the suffering of pretas. We can't see hell realms, we can't see pretas. The first Panchen Lama wrote this beautiful description of the six sufferings of life that you can confirm right now, that you've had since you were, that you knew about since you were a teenager, you know, which is probably the reason why you're here, okay? There were certain lousy stuff going on that you knew already when you were 13 or 14. You figured it out despite what your parents and your church told you, you figured it out. That's why you're here probably. Stuff like, first one, nyeme means nothing's fixed, nothing's certain. Somebody that you think is going to be your friend turns out to be your worst enemy in 3 months. Somebody you think is your enemy turns out to be your best friend in 6 months. I don't know why it always takes longer. But, okay. But you can't trust anything, okay? Can't trust other people's relationship to you, okay? You can't. Why? Are people evil? No. Your karma is crappy, okay? And the one you see as beautiful today, you'll see as terrible in 6 months. And that's not your fault and not their fault. It's karma, okay? And that's one of the sufferings, okay? Lomi Shepa number two. No matter how much money you get, no how much Dharma teachings you get, if you were with His Holiness every day, you'd start teaching, you'd start treating Him like a regular person in about 3 weeks. Okay? If you ever get close to His Holiness and you're around His attendants, it's weird, you know, except for the ones who are practicing Dharma very well. You get used to everything, and then you want more, you know? And the same applies with everything. Ken Rinpoche is the single highest, most qualified Lama in the United States by about 1,000,000 miles. I'm not being biased, okay? I'm just saying he graduated from Tantra College and started running it in 1957 when I was 5. You know, he is the only, out of 10,000 monks, he graduated first, Angi Dambol Haramba, okay? But you're used to him. You're like, oh, yeah, he's having initiation. I'm busy this weekend. You know, just because Lomi Shepa, second suffering of the human mind, can't be satisfied. Everything special becomes normal. Okay? Your mind takes every holy, sacred, special thing and makes it boring and normal within a couple weeks. Okay? And that's it, you know. So anyway, I won't tell you the rest. It's too depressing. There is number six. Drogme means no friend. No one can come with you. Okay, You can pretend that you have a wife or a husband or a girlfriend or a close friend or a comrade or blah, 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 family. But in the end, look, you die. You come into this life alone, naked, and you leave the same way. And you're that way during the whole life. You have short, dangerous liaisons with people. And then you lose them. You know what I mean? You come together for a while, and then karma splits you up again. And that's it. You know, you're on your own. Okay? Deceive yourself as you like, but you're on your own. Okay? And that's one of the sufferings. Does it have to be that way? No. Can there be certain friends? Can there be true satisfaction? Can there be friends that you can live with forever? Yes. Okay? Somebody asked me in Bendigo, Australia, they said, yeah, but can me and my girlfriend get to enlightenment together? And I said, yeah, you'll be Mr. and Mrs. Chakasambhara. And they said, you're kidding me, right? And I said, no, not at all. Okay? You just pull it off. Okay? No problem. These things don't have to happen. Tantric deities don't have these problems. And you will be. It's just a question of how long it's going to take, if you're not already. Okay. What time we got? Okay. 5 more minutes. Oh, suffering. There's a question about death meditation. We had a class on the different realms of existence, all the different kinds of realms, and also we concentrated on the bardo, what happens to you after you die and before you're reborn, how does it feel, what happens, how can you prepare for it. I think the most important thing that came out of that class was your realization, which I've run into a few of you, that you are in a different, you are in a specific realm called the desire realm. Okay? Like until you see emptiness directly, you don't really believe it. After you see emptiness directly, you have one of the realizations is that you are in a place called the desire realm, and it's broken. Okay? This realm doesn't work. Okay? And that destroys the idea of adjustment. You know, oh, if I just ate a little better, if I just gave up Lou schoolboy chocolate chip cookies, you know, if I just could get to the gym one more day a week, if I could just do yoga for 15 minutes more, if I could just find the perfect Mr. or Mrs. B, A, whatever. You know what I mean? The belief that life could be bearable with some kind of adjustment that you haven't made yet is a lie. This realm is broken. Can't be fixed that way. No external object can make you happy. Period. Can't. Okay? It's not the size of your apartment or your position at work or how whether you exercise or not. This is irrelevant. This realm is broken. You're doomed. You stay in this realm, nothing can go right. Okay? Period. Now, how do you get to another realm? Is it like a subway or what do they call those things? Challenger, rocket ship. You know what I mean? No, when I say, like, this realm is broken, you start looking around, you know? You know, and it's not like that. You practice, you purify your world by keeping your vows, and then in this same physical location, you enter your Buddha paradise, okay? And it doesn't look at all like this. So, I mean, you move between from a broken realm to a perfect realm in the same place. Okay, it's not this thing of you have to die or you have to go somewhere else or... It's not like that, okay? Is this a perfect realm already and I don't understand it? Yeah, right. And cancer is just sprinkled around for fun. You know, it's not like that, okay? It's not like that. That's a lie also. That's misinformation. It's not that you're a Buddha already and this is a Buddha realm already and you just didn't see it or something like that. Forget that. Very specifically, you have to take vows, you have to learn them, you have to keep them from hour to hour, and you have to change your world by doing that. And it's a job. And then it will change. And your body will change too. Your body will get lighter, stronger, happier. Every year that goes by, better and better. And then finally just change into a different kind of body. And your mind is keeping up the same speed. And then you're out. Then you're in a different realm. Okay, in the same place. But as it stands now, this realm is unfixable. Any information you have outside of this class for fixing your life is false. It's a lie. Get used to it. Okay? Outside of keeping vows, outside of changing your behavior towards other people, and knowingly thinking about emptiness and how karma plays itself out in the world due to what you did in the past, except for that, everything else is a lie. Nothing works. Okay? That's that investment strategy stupidity thing. All those adjustments don't work. The whole information supplied to you by every newspaper and magazine in this country is wrong. Get used to it. Okay? It's just wrong. It doesn't work. Okay? Sorry. Okay. Maybe wired, but I... I think it's important to know the lifetime layman's vows because I believe that Buddhism will probably spread in this country mostly through lay people. There will be great monks and nuns. There will be great teachers who are monks and nuns. I think America, from the way I see the potential, it's going to be passed down through lay people. And the layman's vows are going to be very important. And I think you should know them correctly, be able to describe them correctly. And I think you should start thinking about giving them to people, okay? Which you can once you've had them. Okay? And you have to put that in your think about it. Okay? That you should turn on other people as soon as possible. Especially to the book thing. Yeah. There's a small ceremony and I'll teach it to you sometime if you want. Okay? I think it should be 95% explaining the vows, 3% taking them, and then 2% being happy at the end. And that's it. You know, I'm afraid most of the time it's 95% giving them, no explanation, and 5% of confusion at the end. Okay. Okay. You're going to have to know some of the basic correlations. Correlations means expected results from certain behavior. Okay? Like, why do people have backaches? And if you have a student in the future who comes to you and says, I have backaches, what should I do? Then what are you going to tell them? What's the karma that causes backaches? What's the karma that causes depression, anxiety, fears? You know, if you really want to be a good Buddhist teacher in America, I think you have to study the books on karma and see what are the specific actions that people did in the past to create, for example, depression. And then you can really help people, you know. You don't even have to charge them anything. Like, you just turn them on to the karmic way to fix emotional problems and physical problems. And they work, okay? So I think you should know some of the, what we call the correlations. Should know the 10 qualities of a qualified lama. Okay, I think should be the first thing you teach somebody. We had it in course number 1. It came up again later in the course, at the end of the Vinaya course, okay? But I think it's really, really good to turn, especially new people, on to the definition of a qualified lama. 10 qualities that a qualified lama should have. Okay. Last question that I will ask you about. Yeah, it's not so hard. Okay. I didn't give you all the questions. All right. But you can try to suck them out of your class later. All right. What really protects you when you take refuge? How do you take refuge? And when I give refuge vows, which you can also do, and you should start doing, okay? But when I get refuge vows, I try to get people not to think like they're switching icons. Like you used to bow down to this guy on this cross, but now you have to bow down to this guy with crossed legs. Okay? You know what I mean? And instead of that picture, it's this picture. And now you're a better person. You know what I mean? And that's just that's not all. Like, I had this loyalty thing when I got to Dharamsala. I was already a strong Christian, and I was like, I'm not bowing to Geshe Dagyu. No way. That's Ten Commandment number 1, you know. You know what I mean? And I had all these weird doubts about everything going on there. Like, it was demon worship or something, you know. And I wasn't going to bow down to, because I remember that vow, you know, that Ten Commandments, you know. By the way, graven image means when you take refuge, you're not taking refuge in a picture, okay? Picture of Lord Buddha can't do anything for you, period. Lord Buddha can't do anything for you. Get used to that, okay? I mean, story of Lord Buddha sitting in his home, their place is attacked by outsiders, and people holding onto his robes are slain, you know, begging him for refuge. Okay? If he couldn't help them, then you can forget it. He's going to magically show up when you're having a bad day and help you. Okay? It doesn't work. So what's the use of Namo Buddhaya, Namo Dharmaya, Namo Sanghaya? You know what I mean? So what's the use of that? How does that protect you? Okay? And then you have to understand refuge. You have to understand, forget the word refuge, it's protection. Okay? What is protection? Your knowledge of emptiness and karma. Period. All three of the three jewels, as opposed to Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, okay? Big difference. There's Buddha, there's Dharma, there's Sangha. Then there's Buddha jewel, Dharma jewel, Sangha jewel. These are not at all the same. Okay? What is the Buddha jewel? What's the Buddha? The Buddha is this guy walking around 2,500 years ago in Bodhgaya. Okay? What's the Buddha jewel? The Dharmakaya, the emptiness of the Buddha. Okay? The blankness about the Buddha that allows those three other bodies to exist, which is really handy. Okay? So what's the Sangha jewel? People who've seen emptiness directly. Okay? What's the Dharma jewel? Seeing emptiness directly. Do we have a theme here? Okay? Really, that's all that can protect you. Okay? Protection. When you're at work and the guy's attacking you, or you're with one of your fellow students or anything else, and they're starting to say something bad to you, take refuge. What's refuge? Your mind goes through the following process. Okay? This person is empty. You know? Probably somebody enjoys what they're saying right now. I don't. Okay? But how I feel about it only depends on my karma. You know, they could be praising me at this moment if I'd had better karma. Okay? And probably there's people who feel a certain way about me that if they heard what this person's saying at this moment, they'd be very happy. Okay? I'm not. Okay? So the reason I have to see them as a bad is my own karma. I understand that. The reason I have to hear these words coming out of their mouth right now is my own karma. I understand that. So above all, I refuse to speak. You know? Above all, I refuse to answer. Okay? Because I don't want to meet them again. This is the way I always say you can eliminate people at work. You don't have to use the post office method, which is a gun. Okay? And Master Shantideva said it clearly. He said, practice the perfection of patience, understand, which means you do it with understanding their emptiness. And then kiss them goodbye. He says, go to them one by one and say, you know, shake their hand, it's been good knowing you. You're going to get transferred within 3 months. You know? And they're like, how do you know that? And say, because I'm being patient with you. You know what I mean? And it works. I swear to God, I had 800 people in my company. I had 150 people in my department. And we all had a fantastic time. You know, the lousy ones got weeded out one by one by Mr. Karma. By refusing to get angry. Refusing to respond to people, what people said. Okay? And then you just eliminate them by doing that. Okay? What's the... What do they call that? Extrapolate it into the future. I mean, first you get rid of the biggest asshole at work. And then you work on the medium ones. And then even the people who irritate you a little bit. And then they're all gone. Well, what happens after that? No, they start transforming completely. I mean, slowly. One by one, they start to shade into tantric deities. Okay? Does it happen all in one day? No. Do they turn into a tantric deity on Sunday and they're always like that after that? No. They shade in and out towards the, as you get towards the end, you know, you swear they're a tantric deity on Monday. And by Tuesday, they look like a totally normal person. And then Friday, they're like shading back again because it's Friday, you know. And then, you know what I mean? And it starts shading back and forth and getting a little, and then finally you start to see them that way most of the time. And your karma is forcing you to see, and you understand why. And it's okay. And then there's this thing where they won't admit it, because you don't have enough karma to have them admit it. So it goes on for another few months, you know, and they're like, no, no, I'm not, I'm just a normal person, you know. And you say, no, no, I see you like this sometimes. They say, no, no, I don't know what you're talking about, you know. And then sooner or later the karma gets so sweet that they just say, okay, you caught me, you know. You know, see, there he is. Okay, but that's the whole Rome wasn't built in a day, and you keep your vows, learn your vows, keep them every 2 hours, and then this stuff starts happening to you, definitely. And that's why you're here, okay? And oh, it's so nice, okay? So do that. Take a break, and then we'll do our groups for a while, and then we have to talk about plans for tomorrow. Okay. To do what? It's going to be the last thing. Okay. We will start. I've waited 20 years to get Mama Sipa trapped. And we did it, it looks like. So I want to make sure it goes off right. So, number one, Amber is doing the stage and general decorating. Am I right? Where is she? I have to have blood vows, right? Okay. So the stage, including that seat in Leon's house. Okay? And you can please take the carpets out of my room. I got some new ones that are going into Shriya Retreat. I want him to walk on them. From the steps to the throne, but not on the steps because he'll fall down. Okay. Very inauspicious. Huh? I don't mind if you load them up. Yeah, that's fine. It'll feel like heaven of the 33. Okay. So who's bringing the carpets? Wick. He's not here, right?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Michael Wick's going to make sure we get the place early and go home late. Right? It's very embarrassing when you're locked out and Mama Sipa shows up. Okay. Margie okay on the car? Okay, Margie's going to bring her big black Lincoln, which is working this week. Okay. What time, Petra? Because she's coming from work. Okay, so I don't have to worry about it. Sounds good. Yeah, you come in Margie's car, like you and Roger and Lama Sipa, and then we'll pay the taxi fare for the other people. Do you have any money? Do you need money? And then I'll reimburse you. Okay? Friend Diane is going to... Where's Friend Diane? $600 check from MSDC. $600 check for Lama Sipa. Okay? Charge it to whatever account's not broke. As if there was one. Okay, so we got that. Fran's got the moolah. Somebody have a swastika throne cover thing? Great. Okay, we got that. All right. But that has to be here by 7? I mean, coming 7? Okay. All right. Everybody bring as many people as they like, okay? I'd like the place full, okay? So bring as many people as you like. It'll be too hot and it'll be sweaty. By the way, anybody can do a fan for him, on him? This little thing? Who's going to do that? Who? Okay. Fan. Not to make him, not to blow him away, but... we got flowers. That's Ellie, right? So you have a $100 budget for that. And Fran will reimburse you. Okay. And you're working on that too, right? Cheeky. That's cheeky. Okay. You guys got any other great ideas? Something nice? When he comes in? Oh, by the way, when they come in, there should be a gauntlet of people all the way to the door. Like, you can spread out if you have to. But the custom is that he walks through the two rows. And you can either hold incense or hold some flowers. Okay? So, who's going to arrange this gauntlet? You already have a job. Geraldo's pretty good at that. Okay. How about Geraldo and Christina? Okay? Gauntlet crew. Yeah, we need a... I think it'd be more fun if he came in alone. Christmas lights?
Christmas lights.
Who's got Christmas lights? Who wants to do the Christmas lights? Rob, you want to do lights in general? If you can't get Christmas lights, get... Okay, buy some or do some tea lights, doesn't matter, okay? If you need money, talk to friend Ann. Okay, Rob. Rob's got the lights. Somebody's got to do this altar properly and not like a smorgasbord. Okay? No, I mean, not too crowded. Okay, and all nice spread out where he can see it. Okay, you got that? You got that. Actually, it's not so bad. I'd say just fill it. Maybe do like a horseshoe. He likes a lot of water bowls.
Big glass bowls.
Big glass bowls. Okay. Seamus has got the... You got the sound. Okay, Seamus is going to do an extra boom bang job on the sound. Probably have Neil Young when he comes in. Everybody at the end should have a kata, or as many as we can. I have a bunch in my room. Who wants to? You already have a job. Who wants to do? Okay, they're in the like third or fourth drawer. You can just take them all. I don't care. Okay, so kataks, and then hand them out to people. You offer them at the end. Okay, with a nice envelope. Who's gonna bring envelopes? Not those cheap little white ones. Some really fancy ones from Kate's papier. Who's doing that? Sure? Okay, bring like 100. And just little ones that people can make offerings. Okay, and then bring something, okay? Bring $1, bring $5, doesn't matter. But it's just bring something, okay? And then we think it's bad luck to put an empty envelope, I mean a blank. No, I mean like write something on the front like please live forever or something like that, okay? So envelopes. Anybody got any other suggestions that I didn't think of? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'd like... Can you take care of that? Okay. We're going to do the eight great arhats from ancient India and Lord Buddha across the top. Okay? But by the way, you must ask Leon properly because he's very sensitive, so I don't want to... You know. Okay? All right. Okay. He doesn't mind at all because those were... a gift from Sarah, but it'd be really nice to have. And then try to keep that order if you can. Especially Lord Buddha in the middle, that's the main thing. Okay, yeah. Sorry? It's illegal to have anything for me when there's a lama like that here. I don't think when he's here, okay? Now we can talk about that, but generally it's not allowed to give something to a lesser lama when it's, huh? I don't mind, that's great. Yeah, that's fine. Okay, any other, by the way, when he gets seated and he's ready to go, then watch and we all have to do nice prostration. Okay? And at the end we have to do all the proper prayers. Are you up for that, people? Are you going to be here? So mandala, all that stuff, okay?
Okay, so Punzok has got the... Don't make it so low we can't follow.
Sing it. Yeah, why not? Do you have it? Do you have a long life prayer for? Do you want to reproduce it? Could we just recite it? Say again? Is it recite? How about we just recite the English? Yeah, here's one here. But okay. Can you, who's going to reproduce it? Can you reproduce it? You already got a job. Okay, work it out with Debbie Bai. She'll help you. Spread the virtue. Don't be a virtue hog. Long life prayer. And then Punso, you got to be ready with that, okay? All right. Anything else? Anybody else have any ideas? John? All the prayers that we might say. Can you guys do that? I mean, just the mandala and the Sangye Chodan Sangye Chomorodhima. And the Gewadiya at the end. Okay? Sorry? Yeah. Yeah, okay. Who's working on that? Do you guys want to be involved with that? Help make the mandala offering at the beginning? Okay? So we need like 4 people. So that's 2. Okay. Who's the other 2? Christina? Anybody else?
Marie.
Where's Marie? Placide. Yeah. Okay. We got it already. Okay. These 3 and Christina. So the first person offers the mandala on a plate. You guys work it out between you, okay? Next person offers body, which is an image of the Buddha. Next offer speech, which is the scripture. And then mind, which is a stupa. Try to find a little stupa. And you always turn it toward yourself first and touch it. And then you turn it around and offer it. And then you offer the kata. And then usually they put it over your neck and then you get it back and you put it back on the tray. So somebody, we need a 5th person standing over the tray. Who wants to be the tray? Yeah? How about Kelly? Okay. Yeah, stand there with the tray. Okay. You need another person to collect it from the thing. Okay. I think Ellie. Oh, Jay. Okay. So you got the finished tray, you got the beginning tray, and you 4 guys are doing the offensive thing. And you can fight over who's going to spill the mandala. yeah, good thing. Okay. Yeah. By the way, the way they really do it in the monastery, to tell you the truth, they turn a mandala plate over, they get 4 short votive candles, and they glue them. And then they have a larger candle in the middle. And that's all. They don't do the rings and all that.
Yeah.
Okay? And it should have a silk thing tied to it that goes, you flap over you.
Yeah.
So just a long, beautiful piece of cloth on a mandala plate with 4 candles stuck to it, like a birthday cake, those, you know, like that high and that thick. And then 1 in the middle, 5. Yeah. Mount Meru in the 4 continents. Okay, got it? You take, yeah, those candles are about that high and about that thick. And then you take a regular mandala plate and you turn it upside down so that the opening's at the bottom. And then you just stick them on there, like you can drip the wax. And that's the 4 continents, then you have 1 in the middle. And then you have some kind of silk cloth coming off of this, about this long. And the person who offers it throws the cloth over their left shoulder and then offers it, okay, like that. And then he'll take it and he'll give it to the person who's got the clothing tray, which is Jay, okay? I'm sure we'll do it very confusedly. Okay. Sorry? Ah, okay, good. All right. Okay. Sorry? Yeah, add the long mandala offering to the papers that people get. Okay. We need to do the long mandala offering. Anybody think of anything else? Sorry? I think Lama Sefa's schedule is, all the high lamas are, they run on their own time, so, you know, that's their right. So I'd be here at 7, and, you know, be ready to stay late. And I don't want people leaving. If you're going to chicken out and if you're going to wimp out, then don't come, okay? Just tell your family you're going to be late, okay? He likes to, when he gets into it, it could be a long time, okay? All right, yeah. But it's very disrespectful to leave, okay? So just decide however long it takes. By the way, why am I doing this? I can't think of a lama who has contributed more to the happiness of Westerners directly than Lama Sopa, period, by about a degree of 1,000, you know what I mean? So, you know, this is a huge chance. So, you know, Who else has put their whole life into building hundreds and hundreds of, you know, over 100 centers and serving people all over the world? You won't find anyone who's done that for Westerners. You know what I mean? And this is the big chance of your life. You know? Yeah.
What language?
I never heard him speak, but I hear he speaks English. So. And very deliberately. Okay. Yeah. Oh, great idea. Who can? What does he like to drink when he teaches?
No sugar and no fat.
Okay. And what kind of tea? Caffeine tea? Caffeine tea? Who can do that?
No.
Jay? Okay, so it has to be in a thermos, hot. Does he add the milk later or put it in before? Okay. Big, in case it goes on for a long time. And then a beautiful cup, and they like the kind of cup with a cover on it. Yeah. Okay, cool. When we prepared for Ling Rinpoche, the senior tutor, we put these fake grapes on the next to the cup, and then he was looking at her, and then he finally... So bring some real grapes or something. All right, Jay, you up for that? Something like little fruits or something, you know, kisses. Okay. All right. I heard he likes flowers, so bring flowers. Bring some little offering, okay? It doesn't have to be a big deal, but something. Don't come up empty-handed. Very bad. And we'll give cutbacks to probably, I have 50 or 20, I don't know, but we'll see. Oh, somebody could iron them. They're kind of grungy. Who wants to do that? Okay, then you coordinate with, who's the cutout person? Gail. It takes about a minute or two each, and I don't have an iron there, because I've never used one. Sorry? Oh, that is a great idea. Who wants to take pictures? Can we do the video? Is Kevin, you up for the video? Okay. Yeah, okay. Maybe two people take pictures would be nice. Okay. All right, that'd be nice to have. Say? Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, you need to bring a lot more tape than with me. He goes late. I heard that. I've never been. Okay. To close up, I wanted to thank all the people who helped with the class. When we first started this school, Anitama and me, in the basement in Hell's Kitchen, with six chairs and two dogs, it was lonely. And we couldn't get any help for anything. And like Margie would come and help and a few other people, but it was really hard. And then when we got to Sixth Street, more and more people started helping. I think now we have about 40 to 50 almost full-time people working for free on 15 different major projects around the world. And it's unbelievable. Like, I don't know of any other place where that many people are putting in that much quality time, you know? And it would be very hard for me to even... I can't go through all the names anymore. I used to, at the end of a class, I used to go through all the names. It's hopeless. Okay, just almost everybody is doing some kind of amazing thing. And it's just amazing. Like, a lot of projects now go on, Street Jewels, stuff like that. I don't even know about it, you know? And hundreds of people get benefited, and it's a fantastic. It's just fantastic. You can't even imagine all the stuff that's going on. Almost everybody in this room is doing something, a major thing. So I just thank you for that, first thing. I wanted to thank all the people who led the, who taught the second part of the class. That would be Annie Palma. You can save your applause to the end. Annie Ali, Winston, Roy, Fran Diane, Margie, Vilma. Are you still haven't missed a class? Where is she? Never missed a class. Oh, don't say. Okay. Mark Miniverney, Elizabeth, Annie Chudrin, Brooks, Michael Wick, and Nancy Karen. Like, amazing. And, yeah. And it's my hope, I mean, John and I talked about, there'll be a schedule, and those people and a few other people will be keeping the courses going in 2000 and beyond, okay? Spread out throughout the city, like underground cells. That's my dream, okay? We'll also be having a meeting at Godstell with all those people, probably late October, I think, and talking about how to plan that. So maybe tomorrow I'll announce the date. Is that okay? It'll be a weekend at Godstell, and we'll just plan how we take over the city. All right? Okay? I wanted to thank John Stilwell especially for... you got to come down, John. Sorry. Yo. You. You still well. Okay. We heard that John was too cheap. I mean, couldn't get a copy of this book, and we wanted to offer. This is Rinpoche's newest book on achieving bodhicitta. Okay. So, John will be running this place during the 3-year retreat. So, this is just a sweeten his days before he starts to work. Thank you, buddy. I'd like to also thank John for teaching the classes. People were very happy. No, I was relaxing, which is the way it's supposed to work. Okay, I think there's too many people to thank, and I can't thank everybody, but there's one person especially who sweated out this course, besides the students. And where would we be without the Sarge? Yeah. We got two gifts for the Sarge. This is one. I'm just trying to get you to do it again so I don't have to worry about it. You ready? One little nun. It's going to give a big thing. You ready? Where's your thing? You got to say something inspiring. We couldn't get rid of this thing.
I'm not going to say that. I just wanted to thank him personally, and I think for all of you, a lot of times we show up, and it's like a paradise here, and there's about maybe 7 people behind the scenes working on the altar, cleaning the floor. He's many times at the Three Jewels trying to get brochures for new people to come, and there's about 12 things that really go on before you come and you sit down from work, and the stage is all pretty, and he's working really hard. So we would really like to thank you. And all the requests that you get from some students going through the boxes and needing homework and quizzes all at the same time, we really appreciate it. And we'd like to... Actually, we have 2 things for you. We have... we have a mandala offering from Geshe Michael, and the store has given you a cushion and some little goodies.
Small cushion.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all. I'll see you. Do some retreat if you can during September. Okay. If not, Those of you who haven't taken Bodhisattva vows, you've got to knock off that course. This is the right time to do it. Class number 7. If you want to take them, probably be later in the year, like November or maybe February, but you have to knock that off now. Other people should do their respective things, okay? But don't waste the time, okay? At least go over the courses. It drives me crazy when people show up at 6 feet and say, I don't know what to do. You know, after 17 courses, you know, 5,000 pages to read, you know? And knock off some of the courses you haven't finished, you know? I have that tantric teaching carrot is out there, and you have to knock off the 18 courses, okay? So that's all on your head. That's all up to you. I can't do anything else, okay? You have to finish, you have those courses. The Moors can give you whatever you need. And just knock them off, okay? Then you can help other people with that, okay? So thank you for making me do this, because it's good for me. And we'll do a mandala, okay? Yeah, okay. One sec. Okay. One sec. I forgot some things. I forgot a few people, and I can't stand to not mention them. Margie, who shows up every single night, even when I don't show up. I don't think... And then Amber, who did the altars. Okay. These are just the people I know about. I don't know if you know that the readings take probably 40 hours a week of work, and that's being done with no pay by Aura. Okay. Christy helps with that. People think they hang around me all the time and get to have talks with me all the time. They have to make an appointment about 3 months ahead, seriously, to talk to me. And they work like 18 hours a day. They get overstressed. They start crying half the time. And they really, really work hard for you guys. So you should thank them sometimes. Okay. And I just wanted to do those people for you. Michael Wig. Okay. Rinpoche named his car Chibeta, which means public horse. And he never refuses anyone. I mean, it's every single day he's doing something for somebody, and he let us use his house, and we ruined it, but he still let us use it. Kevin, who did the video. Somebody came to me today at the teachings. It happens every time, almost every day. They, like, crying, they get down on their knees, they grab me, they say, I got the videos for such and such that you did 2 years ago, and you don't know me, and it saved my life. And that's Kevin's idea, and Kevin's been filming them all. Okay. So, Seamus, who does the video. I'm sorry, the audio is so loud. And his assistant, Edward something 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 the 14th, whose other's name is Ted, okay? Rob and Ian, who do countless running around the city, especially to pick up the readings and stuff like that, okay? I think I got everybody for this class. I don't know. I probably forgot 10 people. I'm very sorry, but anyway, you get the point. Okay. If you've got to catch a bus or a train, just go, okay? Don't worry. This takes a while. So if you're tired and you got to get home, don't be shy, okay? All
right. I just wanted to mention, for the people who are going to be grading final exams, now that I've dug through the boxes that I have, it turns out that I do have an answer key that is specifically written for the final exam. So if you're going to be grading finals, come see me in the back. And one last thing, on your way out, you'll notice a table set up with t-shirts for sale. The money, that's, the proceeds for those shirts are going directly to the ACIP Asian Classics Input Project.
Thank you. Bunny water.